refuse to be susceptible to the demands that you kowtow. If you can be transparent, humble, and yet firm in doing justice, now we can be carried through this.
Welcome to the Stand Firm podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, November 18th, 2025. I'm Nick Landon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm here, as always, with Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. Guys, how are you doing today?
Excellent.
Yeah, doing all right.
I have no witty banter for you guys because the hits in the ACNA just keep on coming. Since last week, Archbishop Wood has been inhibited, and Archbishop Sutton, who was serving as Dean of the province and acting Archbishop of the ACNA during Steve Wood's leave of absence, has himself resigned. He's appointed Bishop Julian Dobbs to take his place as Dean and to therefore basically serve as the head of the ACNA for the time being. I saw someone write online that with the resignation of Sutton and the inhibition of Wood, it's like the ACNA has had its head chopped off. So There's all that to talk about, plus the idea that I've seen in several places that it's the ACNA's hierarchical bishop-led structure that needs to be radically reformed, that it's the bishops themselves and the authority invested in them that's the root of all of these problems. As has been the case for the last few weeks, lots going on and lots of reactions to the lots that's going on. So guys, what is the foremost in your brain this afternoon?
Well, it's devastatingly sad, this whole thing. I just feel like we're in the ruins of what we formerly believed we lived in and served in, the church we thought we had, we didn't have. And I think it's largely due to, well, I know Bishop Wood, Archbishop Wood denies it, but it's largely due to personal failure, one level or another. Like we said it before, the very least imprudence, right? And on his part, and possibly it looks like also on the part of Bishop Sutton. Don't know. He at first denied having this conversation that Andrew Gross heard that he had with Andrew Wood, but now he's gone back on the denial and said he doesn't remember articulating that correctly. He said this in the letter that Bishop Dobbs sent to the entire province yesterday, announcing the inhibition of Archbishop Wood and the resignation or the stepping down from the dean of the province of Bishop Sutton. It just seems to be everything's crashing down. The bright spot, in my view, and maybe I'm biased, but if there's a bishop in the college who can begin to carve some order out of the chaos, I think Bishop Dobbs is the man. He's an excellent leader in our diocese, and he's very good at ensuring that things are done canonically and above board. There's just no hint or shadow or shade, in my view, of corruption in him. And so I think that if you want a person at the helm, if you're looking for a person to take the helm right now who can steer us through the storm, I think he's the man. I believe with all my heart that he's the man that can do that. As for the question of structure, I read that article. I forget where I read it, but
there's four of them going around right now.
Yeah. Assertion that an argument that we don't have
synodical. Yeah, I think yeah. So.
Well, there's another synodicity or something. However you say it.
Having to do with synods.
Right. That's right. In a manner concerning synod.
Right.
And there you go.
Several of the articles mention this in their right, coming out of the Episcopal Church, we purposely did not want that form of government, that form of polity. Because I've been to several general conventions in which that polity was operative, and it was horrible. It's awful. I mean, if you're looking for the quickest way to provide an opening for ideological and theological error, look at the way the Episcopal Church functions. And if that's kind of even a hint of the model that we're going to head toward, I'm all dead set against it. I understand that the thought that our present model is more Roman Catholic than Protestant. I get that. And I I generally I'm favorable to more reformed Protestant views, but I don't think we need more democracy. Maybe that makes me a maybe makes me a makes
monarchist.
Well, you're on record as wanting a Christian king.
I don't think we need more mom. I don't think the answer to the question is to have more popular input. I think the answer to the question is have better laws and have better men who are upholding those laws. Mm-hmm. We do need thoroughgoing reform of the canons. And like we said before, but the present makeup of the ACNA, I think would make a house, say a House of Deputies that was full of laity and clergy who are not bishops, I think that would become a dumpster fire. I think the resolutions coming out of something like that would be horrible. And I think it would be do more harm than good to move to a system like that. But that's just my opinion.
I mean, what's the likelihood of that even being like legitimately considered? I mean,
I don't know that it'll be legitimately considered. I guess I think that people sense that because of the depth of the crisis, we need to consider some radical change. And so they're sensing, okay, we have this kind of moment when we could possibly make some real important structural shifts that these people think need to take place. And they might be right. I mean, you know, there's really a lot of popular sentiment now behind the idea that the system isn't working. So I don't know. I can't imagine too many bishops being willing to sign on to a reform that would make us more synodical in the way that these articles are talking about. And that's what it would require.
It would have to be approved by our current system.
Right. Exactly. You couldn't just shift over to it unless you had a majority of bishops, maybe 2/3 majority of bishops willing to make those kinds of changes, because it'd be a constitutional change. And I just don't see it happening. However, if bishops start to, there is some of the bishops I'm sensing a lot of willingness to bend to popular pressure, which isn't always bad, because some of the things the laity want the bishops to do are good, really good. At the same time, I think it was right to call for the inhibition of Archbishop Wood. I don't like petitions. I wouldn't have signed that petition. I don't agree with people who put the petition together, so I wouldn't sign it. But the end or the goal they were seeking was the right end. But we don't want a leadership structure afraid of a kind of a mob.
Right.
A mob rule.
It seems to me that the issues in the ACNA are much more related to, on the one hand, the newness of the ACNA, the number of senior leaders who were either vetted in the Episcopal Church or in other bodies where the vetting procedures were lax, to say the least, and then weren't for years and years and years after their ordinations and consecrations. It seems to me much less likely that the problem is the structure itself. I just don't see any, I don't have any examples of New Testament lay-led organizations that pop into my head. I see St. Paul seeing house churches and immediately saying they need elders. You go and appoint elders in those churches. And then when the elders come together, which we don't see a whole lot of in scripture, but notably Acts 15, we do see a council of elders that does talk about and debate an important issue. But as I read Acts 15, I read James as making a decision. He hears all the input and then he says, here's my ruling. And he leads. He doesn't ask for a vote. He says what should happen in the church, and that's what happens.
Yeah. And I think that's to your point, Matt. I mean, I wouldn't say that our polity is more Roman Catholic in a non-Protestant sense, other than the fact we have bishops, but in terms of some sort of ordained hierarchical leadership. I mean, even the Baptists have an elder board. I mean, the sessions, Presbyterians have sessions. I mean, it's not a, the idea of having laity, like in the House of Deputies, have theological authority to a certain degree, at the very least by introducing legislation or initiatives is, well, to Nick's point, I think that's unbiblical and a bad idea, across the board. I mean, that's not saying that you should have some sort of impossibly high standard for a very small group of people to make every decision. I mean, I'm not arguing that either, but I don't think that a move towards, as you were saying, more, as it were, populist or democratic leadership of a church is the right direction. And I don't actually think, I don't, with you, Nick, I'm not sure our system, I think our system has broken down. I don't think the system itself is in need of massive overhaul personally. And I don't really think it's necessarily a function, again, bracketing the accusations, and I forget who said it on Twitter, but I do think that to the extent that the statements have wholeheartedly painted the picture as if Archbishop Steve is the perpetrator and all of the people who are at this point still accusing him of things are the victims, is premature and unfair just across the board, because we've yet to hear, and I'm sure we're going to, it's to a certain degree, some sort of defense or at least explanation. But in the process, that's not the proper, as we've said before, the only side that gets to speak openly and freely is the aggrieved, the purportedly aggrieved side, because of just the way the system is set up. So, I'm withholding judgment to the extent that I'll make it personally, as if that would make any lasting effect on the actual situation. But that being said, one of the things I've been thinking about, which has been confusing to me, is that I think you have, in this entire past, I don't know, how long has the Ruck trial been going on? 6 years, 7 years? I mean, I feel like since 2019, 20, or whenever sort of the ACNA and its, I don't want to say it's naysayers, but people that have been sort of persistently pointing out supposed systemic and structural flaws within the DNA of the church itself have been coming onto social media, there seems to have been a real, surprising to me, sensitivity to, for lack of a better word, online criticism, or kind of, what they call like social media negativity concerning the leadership or the direction of the church, to the extent that it seems to have had an outsized influence on decision making, or at the very least, people second guessing decisions they've made or the perhaps they're going to make since, well, for as long as I can remember now. It goes back to the accusation, I don't know when it was, that somehow the ACNA was systemically racist, and you see everyone like wringing their hands all of a sudden, and trying to backpedal and making statements. And then they had the ACNA is misogynistic or something, or that I think when the Ruck, when the statement about homosexuality came out, there's like people going, bending over to say, oh no, we're not this. And, they had the Dear Gay Anglican letter, and that went, quasi-viral in our little, in our small little cosmos here. And through it all, there's a part of me that just wonders, I don't know if it's generational. I don't know if it's temperamental. I don't know if it's what it is, but there seems to have been some, like a real instability and insecurity that's been inserted into our system, which has handicapped decision-making and sort of decisive judgment one way or the other, which has contributed to the prolonged, Ruck trial, people recusing themselves, people not wanting to be on this or that, or people making statements here. And I feel for, I mean, I can't imagine if I was either Bishop Ruck or the accusers or whoever is involved having to endure a 6 year process where you're simultaneously still trying to be a, a human being, much less a bishop and a priest and a father and a friend and all the things. You have that on one hand. And, it's, I mean, hindsight and retrospect is always only somewhat beneficial, but you wonder if somehow the Ruck trial had been adjudicated in a mercifully normal amount of time, whatever the outcome would have been, if that wouldn't have allowed for a measure of trust that would not have then exacerbated the situation with Bishop Wood, not saying that any of the details would have changed necessarily, but But if there wouldn't have been sort of this compounding sense of futility and frustration on behalf of a certain, group of people, which to I'm largely sympathetic. I mean, I say largely, not entirely, but I am sympathetic to the people who have been pushing complaints, evidently, and making good faith accusations and trying to work with the system. And as much as I have said, trust the system, the more information that comes out, the more it seems like, well, the system, I don't know if the system's broken, but it didn't seem to work the way it was at least intended to. And I think at the very least, on the other side of this, something has to change with respect to people taking responsibility for the leadership that they've risen to, and whether that means, making the hard decision or having the hard conversation or making the accusation when made public, or not. I mean, that's the case. Like reading something and saying, yes, the buck stops with me, and I'm going to say yes or no, or I'm going to move it on. I am the person to whom it's supposed to go. Again, I'm conflating all of the various such as Twitter feeds and statements on this into one sort of general reflection. But I think that we're with Anne's Substack today, I don't have a sense that this is a mortal wound, or that somehow we've uncovered the fact that it is unsustainable and ill-founded. But I do think that there will be, some properly chastened, and I put myself in that category, more humble, wise, hopefully wise, and prayerfully deliberative people going forward who are more aware of the vulnerabilities that we have, but also, I think, ultimately grateful for the structure that we've been given.
I think a speedy and clean Ruck trial would have helped, but I actually think that the problem is deeper and broader than that. I think it's a, I mean, COVID is sort of the perfect example, but it's certainly older than that too. There is a philosophy now or an assumption about the world that is relatively new in sort of historical terms, wherein as you rise in authority in an organization, it used to be that you were seen as more and more trustworthy the higher you rose, because that's how you got to rise, is that you were seen as trustworthy and efficient and good at what you did. Now there is an assumed suspicion of anybody who has any power at all. And the higher you rise in an organization, the more suspicious you become, the less trustworthy you are assumed to be. And it is even, I think, sort of caught by the people who are themselves occupying those roles. They begin to see themselves as less trustworthy and more suspicious. So when they get any sort of pushback from those over whom they are supposed to have authority, they try to cave altogether. And so it's this weird cultural thing where, in the same way that so much has changed over the last 50 or 60 or 100 years, where like we used to respect the old and now we're pushing them out to sea on ice floes. It used to be that if you rose to power and authority, it was assumed it was because you were good. Now it's assumed that it's because you're bad.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen it before, but we've seen it before in things like the French Revolution. It's a revolutionary dynamic. That's what this is. It's the old is evil and bad, and the new is good. The youth are the righteous ones. The elders are the corrupt ones. The aristocrats are the source of all evil, and the common people are good, led by the intelligentsia. So I get that dynamic. I sense it. And so the bishops are quote unquote aristocrats, and so they are necessarily going to be making decisions and taking actions that are self-aggrandizing and self-interested, and they need to be brought under control and or toppled. I think I read someone on Twitter today saying that we should just have a whole overturn of the entire college. Like,
100%
Let the
turn over
low
in the college.
country. That's right.
Yeah, well, that would be a disaster, because then that won't happen either. But if something like that did happen, then you just get bishops who are interested in kowtowing to whatever the whim of the day is to keep their place. We don't, and I think the last the I mentioned last time I said something like 5 minutes ago, I said the same thing, but I'll say it again. The last thing we need are our bishops who are afraid to lead and
Amen.
who are afraid to make decisions So
Well,
this is your.
and they're going to necessarily get pushback from, both the normal people who won't be happy if the bishop came out and said, the sky's blue, the old adage, with and the same people who may have some legitimate disagreements, but it's not their position nor responsibility to make a decision. So, it's like the first time I became a rector, the old rector who I loved said, enjoy the job as long as you recognize that any decision you make is going to make somebody upset. It's like, well, here we go. And I think that's back to my point. I think that there's, the role of social media in our lives, much less in our church, I think needs to be really considered. Not from a negative get rid of it standpoint, but just the reality of it that like everything you say and do, particularly as a bishop, is going to be scrutinized, and there's going to be both anonymous and non-anonymous people, some with large quote unquote platforms, some with small, who are going to for whatever reason like or dislike what you say, and you need to just come to grips with that beforehand. It's like when the I mean I've had conversations with bishops in the past who, were worried about being called, homophobic or racist or misogynistic or all these things. And I said, well, look, I mean, the church wasn't birthed, as has been erroneously stated, out of reaction to the spirit of the age. We weren't reactionary, but we have taken a stand against the spirit of the age. And to the extent that some of our core convictions, i.e., biblical Christian convictions, are going to come under scrutiny and outright rejection and bring opprobrium from a certain group of people, whether within or without our church, is just part of the that's part of the call of Christian leadership, much less in our particular denomination and province. And so, if you are in a situation as a laity, priest, or bishop who's going to be constantly hand-wringing about making decisions about biblical convictions to the extent that it then unsettles you to the point where when you're in a situation where you need to make a decisive call one way or the other, in whatever sort of responsibility you found yourself, and you get sidetracked, slowed down, or otherwise discombobulated, I think that's going to lead to the breakdown of the system. And I'm not pointing to any one thing in particular, but I see the way that like the frustration from the laity, and I would say the priest for that matter, with the seeming stalling of the movement of the House of Bishops with respect to some of these decisions they've been given to make, I think, is a righteous frustration.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it came directly because they're
Because of the
incompetent
system.
or bad people. I think that it's because there's been a weakening, to your point, Nick, of the sense of authority and the empowerment actually to lead, that I think anyone that's so called to these positions in the future is going to have to really count that cost. That it's in a certain sense a thankless job, I mean, because you aren't going to be able to please everyone, and you're going to be called things, and you're going to be second guessed, and all the things that come with it. But I think that, you have to have a clear conscience before the Lord, and you have to have, by God's grace, some trusted advisors, and then hopefully the support, not the unquestioned support, but at least the trust of the people you've been given to lead. And then, I can speak as at least one under shepherd of the over shepherd. We'll stand behind you. We'll trust if, we have to inhibit this person, or this person has to be put on leave, or this person is exonerated. We talked about this months ago now, I think, when all the confusion about the Ruck trial happened. And, Matt, we were talking about people that you trust who have seen documents that we're not privy to say, hey, hold on, things that are done in secret are going to be brought to light, and trust us. I mean, at some point, there's no organization that can exist without any trust. And so I think that, we may have lost some, but I, for one, don't think that these men, contrary to what some people have said, sort of rose with zeal in their eyes to the heights of power with a self-righteous contempt for all of the unwashed and the impious and the Episcopal Church and all of those heretics and the other denominations, and that there's sort of this spirit of pride that is permeating through the province. Like, I haven't experienced that. I don't see that. And I know many of these people, and I know either before or after they became part of the ACNA, and to the extent that there was that, it certainly wasn't palatable, and it certainly wasn't articulated. And if you just look very practically speaking at what many of these men sacrificed to become, bishops in the ACNA, compared to, for lack of a better word, whatever career path they otherwise could have been on, it's a joke to think that somehow there was this zealful kind of self-righteous cancer that is now being excised through these humbling times. I mean, I think whatever else it is, that is not the case. And I know the priests that many of the priests that have walked away from things, the bishops who have laid down other more lucrative and even in a worldly sense powerful career paths, and for whatever else you want to say about them, it is not a group of opportunistic moralist self-righteous moralizers who are now getting what they deserve or something. I mean, I'm just paraphrasing some of the more negative X comments, but like that's a cynical, unchristian, and well, frankly, untrue depiction of these men. Whatever you think about their particular theological positions on whatever the presenting issues are within the broad spectrum of the ACNA, I do trust that they are faithful men who are not infallible, who I think the system has been tested, and we will, by God's grace, shore up some of the weaknesses of it. But I also think that there's still a lot of goodwill and good leadership that is being exercised and will prove itself on the other side of this to withstand whatever the challenges that we're facing are now prove to be and to bring.
Well, I remember coming out of the Episcopal Church and looking up to all the bishops who led us out. And some of the men who led us out became bishops as a consequence of their leadership during the Troubles, the fight. And yeah, they were universally respected and admired. And nobody thought at those time at that time that the bishops who led us out were power hungry, arrogant men just seeking their own fame and fortune. I mean, they left a lot and behind, and they left the Episcopal churches, especially the older people who left. I mean, I was younger at that time, but the older people who left were leaving behind, not fully vested, not pensions that were not going to get paid out as much as they could have. Homes, churches, we all know that. We all know the story. So,
Well, not everyone does. I mean, that's part of the problem. I
yeah,
mean,
that's
like,
part
that's
is.
not that's that's part of the problem. It's
That's
like,
part of the, that's part. Well, and
you can
some people
look
who
at
know think it was a mistake. Some people in the ACNA think it was a mistake to leave the Episcopal Church. I've heard that on the certain corners of the province. So I do think that maybe some of the bishops in the college are feeling whiplash because they're used to being held in high regard and respect by the people as they should have been. But we're facing this crisis, and I think what needs to happen, and you're kind of touching on that earlier, and I think the first part of what you were saying, JD, is we need a leader right now who will be able to say, yes, there have been some terrible things that we have not handled rightly, that we have failed in the system. That we had to act rightly with the system that we have, and so own the fact that the Ruck trial has gone on too far or too long. Own that the system needs to be corrected. Own that probably Archbishop Wood should have been inhibited 2 weeks ago when the charges came out. Not as a matter of guilt, because inhibition doesn't say you're guilty. It
Right.
just means you're stepping back while we investigate this, and not exercising your ministry until you're vindicated or found guilty. Admit all those things are wrong, and yet refuse to go the full, be susceptible to what Nick was talking about. Refuse to be susceptible to the demand that you kowtow. If you can be transparent, humble, and yet firm in doing justice, now we can be carried through this. Go too far to the kowtowing side, it's gonna be a disaster. Continue being deaf and blind to what's happening, it's also gonna be a disaster. There's only one way to go forward, to go through this, and that's forward with being very transparent, honest, humble, and yet firm in the direction we're headed.
So, in some of the online discourse about the causes of the problems in our church, and we've talked now about the good of an episcopacy as we've called it. Some people are suggesting that because the ACNA has an all-male episcopate by its constitution, that it was inevitable that this specter of abuse and misconduct would raise its head. We've seen that. I think we've seen that since the institution of the ACNA. We've even seen oblique apologies for it from ACNA leadership.
Well, it's very helpful that we have the, by contrast and comparison, we have the perfectly healthy system of the Church of England and the Episcopal Church.
Right.
That we can line up those egalitarian bodies with our complementarian body and see just how non-dysfunctional they are, how non-corrupt, everything is pure as a clean difference. So I think that's a lot of wishful thinking. I grew up in the
and
Episcopal
it's not
Church.
Just mis it's not just corruption, it is actual abuse and misconduct.
Oh yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, the idea that there's no corruption or abuse in egalitarian organizations is
absurd.
Like unicorns and it's a mythical beast that doesn't actually exist in real life, because the reality is women are human beings and men are human beings, and women can be corrupted by power just like men can. Women can abuse just as easily as men can. Look, I mean, the public school system, I think JD mentioned this off air, is a great example of this. You see lots of female teachers being caught and arrested for sexual abuse. It's not just something that men do, and it's not just something that happens in male spaces.
And there is power in every space.
Yeah.
So it's better to acknowledge it, locate it, and put guardrails around it rather than just say like, oh, whoever has the largest social media following, they really have the power.
That's right.
I mean, look, there's Potiphar's wife is in the Bible, as is,
Delilah.
Yeah. So you have both sexes are fully capable of being this way. Like my aunt was, and listened to some woman, for who it was, say, you know, if we'd had women presidents during the aftermath of World War II, all the way through Vietnam and afterwards, we wouldn't have had a Cold War, because they would have worked out how to get along. And they said, well, yeah, we would have had a nuclear war.
he
said, I would have pushed the button a lot earlier than the male president, because this is a very opportunistic thing for these people to say. They wanted to get rid of the idea of all male episcopate, and they're going to use this crisis to push it. It goes back to what we were saying last week, which is while they're, I think Jeff Walton asked that question, some people see this as a sign that the system is broken and corrupt, while others see it as a conspiracy to take down the ACNA.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Which one is it? And the answer is yes. I mean, it's not either.
Well, yeah.
Either or is
and
yes.
Let's be fair again. And I know y'all aren't perpetuating this, but the idea that the specific facts of the, even the three trials altogether that we're talking about, involve blatant sexual abuse and or rife corruption, it's just not true. Like, we have an allegation against the archbishop. He's categorically denied. That is yet to be adjudicated, so I don't know the facts on that. And I know that, and we have Bishop Ruck, who, you know, at worst was incompetent in his handling of a very difficult situation, which he himself has admitted to a certain degree. And so he's being tried not himself for corruption or sexual abuse, but by and large, you know, extreme mismanagement, if not mishandling, which again might be sufficient for the trials. Again, I haven't seen the specifics. And then Bishop Jones had a whole host of things that he's accused of, and none of them rose to the level of outright, you know, wanton corruption or explicit sexual abuse. And so even the fact that we're talking about these issues as if they are in anything par with what routinely you hear, as you pointed out, Matt, about, you know, sex abuse scandals in the public school system or anything even close to approximating the scandals in the Roman Catholic Church, is already given ground to and allowed the conversation to take place on a field of rhetorical conflict that has ceded the victory to the people who want the ACNA to fail. Because, you know, I think that Bishop Ruck, you know, the details of it, we talked about it before, to the extent that they're known publicly, it doesn't seem like he handled it very well. But again, that's just from a reading. And then again, Bishop Wood, all of the complaints that have been made public thus far, except for the sexual advance, the alleged sexual advance, seem like they could at the very least have been dealt with in a different way other than a presentment or a charge. And here we are, nevertheless. Again, I'm not saying that there aren't problems, and I'm not saying that mistakes haven't been made, and there's probably going to need to be responsibility taken by people that were given that responsibility and perhaps failed or stumbled. But the idea, what I'm pushing back on, is that we went from an alleged attempted kiss and some heavy-handed leadership techniques, for lack of a better word, that again might be present have been presentable, might be judged to be beyond the pale. We went from a mishandling of a complicated relational situation that nevertheless did result in the actual perpetrator being put into prison. And then, we had this disagreement with Jones and the rest of the college about things, all of which are unpleasant and not things that I want to deal with. And certainly these bishops that have gotten in the middle of it don't want to deal with. But the idea that now we are then the next step talking about needing to restructure the ACNA because of systemic sexual abuse and corruption, and like, that doesn't fit with the facts of the case, even in the most uncharitable read. And so, if these trials were all marked by different circumstances that did warrant that type of bald language, then I'd like to think that I would be right there with people saying, somehow we've allowed, sexual predators to infiltrate our episcopacy. Well, that's the type way that some people are intimating, if not explicitly speaking. And I just reject that. I reject it. I think it's uncharitable, unfair, and unchristian. And I think that's not to say that any of the three cases in and of themselves don't warrant significant and sober and careful consideration and adjudication. But I think that this is part of the problem, is that failings and oversight and missteps, to the extent that they happened, have been weaponized and jumped on by people who have been looking for, I'm gonna say, an excuse, but an opportunity to air grievances that they've had with the ACNA in a variety of ways. And we will withstand that. I mean, the system, for lack of a better word, the biblical structure of our threefold ministry, the convictions that founded our church, the faithfulness, albeit the redeemed sinful faithfulness of our leaders at every level, will withstand this stumble. And I think we're going to be stronger on the other side. I think that we'll be, like I said before, we'll be humble, we'll be chastened. But I don't think that there needs to be a rethink of the purpose, the founding, and the mission of our province. And I think the people that have reconsidered whether we should have done it in the first place have a lot other issues that I would like to talk to them about than whether or not, our management structure was able to handle the HR complaints in a proper way and as quickly as we should have, however credible the allegations end up being. And so, I'm just praying, and I trust with you, Matt. I think Bishop Dobbs, I think there are a number of bishops in our college I'm grateful are there. And I think that the Lord has called him and put him into this position. I mean, I'm sure that's not the way or how he wanted it to be, but here we are. And so now we pray for him. We pray for, the bishops that have been still at this point accused. We pray for the people making the accusations, and we trust that, as light comes to the situation, that however imperfect justice this side of heaven will be, that nevertheless there will be something looking like the Lord's justice will prevail in this, and we'll continue on. When I think about the problems ACNA has canonical confusion, perhaps some gun-shy or skittish leaders that are handicapped or are paralyzed at times when I wish they hadn't been, and so on and so forth. Those are problems. But systemic corruption and unbridled sexual deviancy among the leadership is not one of them. We're going to survive this, and we'll be, like I said before, I trust we'll be stronger on the other side, perhaps smaller, perhaps sort of organized differently. I don't know. I mean, they haven't asked me yet, but But until then, I'll just keep serving my local parish and assuring them that there are good men in leadership. We pray for them for a reason. We don't think they're infallible, but we do trust that the Lord has called them to this position, and we will walk behind them as best we can and hold them up in prayer until it's clear that we have to do otherwise.
I mean, we are probably coming to being close out of time, but I probably disagree with you about the depth of the problem. I think it's deeper than you do. I think we need
Maybe.
really dramatic reform of our legal system and reporting system. All that needs to be overhauled. And I think there have been some real failures. The evidence that we know about who Bishop Ruck let into the diocese, I think that I don't see how. He's not. We talked about this last week. We're going to rehash it, but the responsibility of a bishop in these cases is paramount.
I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying that that's not a symbol of
No,
sexual corruption. I
we
mean,
don't.
that's
I
a
agree with you
real
about that.
lack
We
of.
don't have like a bunch of predators running around with
That's
purple
all I'm
hair.
saying is
Yeah,
I mean, we
I
may
agree with
have
that.
some inept. I'm not
Right.
saying this is the case, but in general, I would agree with the fact that possibly what we're looking at is gross mismanagement. Which has repercussions. I mean, that's not. But that's my point, is that that's a different type failure, which is still a failure, but I agree with you.
Well, I had a full-fledged plan to revamp the ACNA's reporting process and judicial systems, but we don't have any time to get into that today. So maybe next week. Thanks to you guys for talking. Thanks to our listener for listening. If you want to keep the conversation going with us, please be in touch. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com or join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks, as always, to JD Koch and Matt Kennedy. I'm Nick Lannon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.